office, I would like to come in and read the Word of God. Now look, if you are on your way to heaven, and I am on the way to hell, what is this to you?
We'll do it live! Fuck it! Do it live! I'll write it and we'll do it live! F***ing thing sucks!
And WBAL, you're on the air. Good morning.
Good morning. I think you guys are doing a terrific job. There's some wonderful people overnight. I think Max Schmeeb is brilliant and R. Paul Martin is brilliant, but I don't know how many people get to hear them. And I want to say thanks. It's a tremendous job.
Well, thank you very much for that.
History. I'm your curator and janitor, Max Schmeed. All right, we got to get quickly to Gene Shepherd from This Day in History, November 20th, 1963. Big Lie Techniques. Lost Gene Shepherd here in the Dustbin of History, WBAI, New York.
We'll be right back. You ever get the feeling that that you've got an itch? Oh boy, what an itch. You've got an itch somewhere that's almost impossible even to describe to yourself, but it just itches, you know. What is this? I suspect that the true sign of old age is when that itch disappears. Ta-ka-ta-ta-ing. Ta-ing. Yes, and of course that itch is connected with a lot of things. Have you ever had the feeling, too, at the same time that you're going just a little bit, ever so slightly mad? Because people keep telling you about funny movies, and you go there, and you don't get one laugh and about 17 reels of stuff that comes out, you know. Boy. And you wonder what is it? What is it? What's the matter with me? What's the matter? Is my sense of humor gone? Am I somehow not getting it? Like there was a movie here a couple of months ago that appeared on the scene that all the magazines, boy, they wrote about what a great, fantastic, funny movie it was, and I got to go see it. And, I decided that the time was now ripe for me to go see this great, fantastic movie. It's one of these Italian things, you know, and it was hailed as one of the great comedies of all times. I got one small chuckle. And the chuckle came actually is when the lady in front of me, a fat lady, started to sneeze fantastically. And as she did so, she belted her husband once, reaching for a Kleenex and knocked him into the aisle. It's a very funny thing. I wasn't laughing at her sneeze. I was laughing at him trying to make it back to the, you know, that's another story. But and I kept saying, what is it? Am I mad? What's the matter with me? The New Yorker likes it. They love it. The Village Voice loves it. Everybody loves it. And here I'm sitting. I could hear a few. Now, like tonight, I saw the screening of a movie, which is kind of already like a legend among movie people, you know. And I took time out, like, up there. And it's as though there's a secret thing going on. I don't know what it is. The minute certain actors and certain people would say a line, you'd hear this insane giggling in the crowd. And I'm sitting there, you know, and I'm waiting for it to happen to me. And I think, now, will somebody please out there, just one person say, Shepard, please, Shepard, one thing about you, even though you're rotten, twisted skunk, one thing about you, you've got a minimal sense of humor. Well, why don't you say that, please, to me? Please, just one, will you say it to me, Don, will you? You've known me for a long time. Just say it to me. You don't have to mean it, for God's sakes. Just say it. Please. I'm getting nothing. Nothing, just a cigar puffing in there. What? That's not enough. I mean, that's not enough. You're just saying it out of loyalty to this crummy company. I can tell you that because you know you got to get the show on here. There must be somebody. I mean, well, I'll tell you, it's a funny scene. I another time, of course, that gets into a pretty... of course, you wonder sometimes where... Of course, humor is a sneaky thing. Like the other day, I'm watching television, see? And again, I have a feeling that the little things that creep in between the big shows, you know, like they'll have a big show like the historical perspective of the sweep of history concerning the Western civilization and its downfall. And we have very important guests. David Susskind will interview Sidney Poitier, a deep thinker. He will interview James Baldwin, a deep thinker. He will interview Zero Mostel and Zsa Zsa Gabor on the forthcoming fall of Western man. Da 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 da. You know, and I'm sitting there, and all the big stuff is going on, and I'm waiting for him to come out with the answer, and it's going on and on. Then all of a sudden, after all the programs are gone, they put on one of these lousy little late night commercials, you know, that come on for toys that they have for Christmas, and the truth suddenly is belted out like somebody hit it with a great big fat Louisville slugger and caught a hold of it on the fat end, you know, and it got sailing out of the TV set. There is a commercial. Have you seen the one about the kid sitting there? She's a girl, you know, the little kid. Is there somebody says that there's a girl sitting there, see? And she's got this doll. See? And then the doll, I don't know what the doll's called, something like Myrtle Nurse or something. There's a doll sitting there, see? And the girl is looking at the doll. She is the mother, the kid is, you see. Obviously, she's playing mother. Well, then all of a sudden, the doll goes, hoo-choo! The doll sneezes. Well, now, you know, what would be your reaction? Well, not this kid. This kid begins to grin. The doll has just sneezed. Well, there is a slight pause, you know, and the kid looks all thrilled about it, you know. Oh, boy. Oh, the doll has sneezed, see. Then suddenly the doll bends over. Don, the doll doubles up in pain. And the doll says in a doll voice, a tortured doll voice, oh, my tummy hurts. Well, with that, the kid goes ape. This little kid just goes out of her skull. She is so pleased with it. You can just see that twisted, rotten little grin. She's smiling ghoulishly. The doll is twisted over and is saying, my tummy hurts. My tummy hurts. My tummy hurts. And the little kid is having the time of her life. The doll is writhing on the floor in what looks like total pain. My tummy. Of course, you know that you can buy for your kid now. You can buy a little phony splint, you know, that he can put on his arm, pretend like he's busted an arm or he's busted his neck, and he can wear it down there, and it's a laugh a minute. Oh, it brings pops every 30 seconds. Cut it out there. Oh, yeah. Well, of course, anything's possible, believe me. Anything's possible in a time and in a place and, you know, where a big popular song. Have you heard that great popular song that they're singing now, teenage DJ shows? There's a big popular hit called God Bless America, the home of the boy I love. God help us if that guy cuts out on that chick. You got another anti-American. You know, it's a funny business, though. With Christmas coming on, as it is, the truth is in the air. It seriously is. It's on all sides. And I think now, as part of WOR's vast, hold it there, I'll give you the cue, WOR's vast public service policy, we bring you once again our biweekly suggestion for those little things that you'd like to fill in the little niches and the crannies and the cracks with underneath your Christmas tree forthcoming. Oh, good evening, every one of you. It's old Chucky here, Mr. Chucky back again with his gift suggestions. And we've had a wonderfully delightful, exciting week. And I'd like to tell you one of the funny things that Dickie said to me last night. We were down at one of our favorite taverns enjoying a little beer when Dickie said to me, Chucky, I've got a real surprise for you this Christmas. I said, well, Dickie, please don't tell me now because I can hardly wait. I love surprises. So now we've got a wonderful little Christmas gift suggestion for help. And as you know, we've been having a very exciting week down at the shop, Mr. Chucky's Atelier and Fashion Shoppy. And we've got a lot of things that we'd like to talk to you about tonight. And now let's get underway with our gift suggestions brought to you as a very, very special public service of Mr. Chucky's. And now, first of all, these are the little things that have been suggested from time and time and time again lately in the wonderful, upcoming, very exciting holiday. I'll tell you, I get so excited when a holiday comes up. I get so excited. It's like some of those afternoons. I remember last year out at the beach in Fire Island, there were a gang of us just sitting around, and we were talking about the most exciting things that happened to us. Well, I'll just tell you, when my time came up, I said, fellows, there's nothing that excites me more
than a real big holiday. Well, there are certain other things, but actually, a holiday is very exciting. Well, now let's get on with our gift suggestion. Here is a wonderful little idea. An electric live-action bartender reeling from side to side. He shakes the chrome and plastic cocktail mixer, listens professionally to the crystal cubes, fills the glass, gulps it down. Then his face changes to flaming red and billows of smoke just stream from his little ears. Natural color returns and he starts his next martini, the next, the next, the next, and the next, and it's all transistorized. A barrel of fun. Now, for those of you who like your fun in a lot of different ways, here's one that I think you'll enjoy. Set 'em up and shoot 'em down. Royal Guard soldiers set for grown-ups. Makes war games realistic. Cannon actually shoots. Boom-o! Safely line up soldiers and press the wheels. Boom! Cork flies out and mission accomplished. They go down like real soldiers. Plugged right through. It does 'em the best good. Now, here's something I know you'll love, and I just can see some of the delighted expressions on your friends' faces when they open those little Christmas stockings and find this staring up at them. Give them the evil eye with your own blinking third eye. Think of that for just a moment, your own blinking third eye. It blinks, it's startling, sensational. All eyes will be on your eyes. Imagine the uproar when all three of your eyes stare back. You can place an eye now right in the middle of your little forehead. It's great for keeping an eye on things. The better to see you with, my dear. It's a lovely, gifty suggestion, a third eye. And now for those of you who are more seriously inclined, a revolving nun doll. Fully transistorized, it plays Ave Maria and is a lovely little gift for those of you who are more serious about life. And again, along those lines, Let Us Pray reflects this pretty table trio. Inspirational salt and pepper ladies and matching larger size napkin holder with a special mustard pot. Each involves a reverent mealtime prayer as they serve you, quietly playing Ave Maria and the Little Church in the Dell when you're serving your mustard. Soft pink glazed ceramic for those who are really serious about their religion. And now, other suggestions that we think that you'll find ducky for that little extra niche in the stocking. Goofy gliders for fun-loving grown-ups. Great for letting off steam. Little paper gliders, the kind you used to make when you were a little boy. These are gliders that come all made up, just ready to wake up those office desk nappers. You just sail them around the office, releasing inhibitions and causing a commotion everywhere. They're silly sailplanes of paper. You fold them and fly them, whoopee, to get your message across. And there's a message printed on every one. Little things like, me boy, you girl, or me boy, you cute. Things like, oh, ducky, or you just know where you can go. Things like that. I think you'll have a lot of fun around the office. And a final little suggestion for those of you who really dig life. Here is a beautiful little special suggestion. Hear your own heartbeat. A genuine medical stethoscope is the very same kind your doctor uses, but especially gift-wrapped and especially adjusted so that you can sit by the hour and listen to your own lovely heartbeat. Brand new professional instrument lets you listen to the rhythm, blum, blum, of your own heart beating. You can hear through walls, use it for all sorts of wonderful things, and it's very educational and makes a delightful Christmas gift. And so we hope all of you have picked up a little suggestion here and there, the lovely little revolving nun that sings Ave Maria and the mustard pot with the Lord's Prayer on it. These are all little suggestions that we're throwing out to you, and we'll be back with more. This is Mr. Chucky, a special service of WOR's vast public service programming, and a merry, merry, merry Christmas. By the way, only 29 more Christmas shopping days, so keep your eye peeled for that third eye. Speaking of those who are serious, this is WOR AM and FM New York. And we just thought you ought to know something about it. I mean, the way it's going. The idea is, you know, it isn't often that people... Oh, before we go any further, hit the thing there, will you? There you go, down there. Holy smokes, what's this? Something's coming, what is it?
Ooh. There goes Riviera, there goes...
Oh, boy, look at March. 7,000 drum majorettes. There they go. I can't understand what they're saying. What are they saying? Place.
Adventure begins at your Buick dealers.
Oh, boy.
The place to see and drive this great new international classic car.
Yeah.
See the 64 Riviera at your Buick dealers this week.
Riviera. MGM thing that was. You know, wouldn't it be great if some car company or somebody who with a vague sense of humor, I don't know many companies that have much of a sense of humor about themselves, but if they had some gigantic thing and they misspelled it in chrome, like the Buick Riviera. You know, just there it is. Or they put the I before the E in Riviera. And people says, that doesn't look quite right. You know, you'd have everybody in the country looking at the back end of your car trying to figure out what's wrong, you know? Speaking, I'm sorry. I suddenly drop into this reverie. While we're on the subject, you just can't help it, you know. On the subject of the reverie, you know, it's funny. I guess maybe it's because we're Americans, but we do some very, very interesting things. I think every other country does too, but in their own way. It's hard for us to recognize the nuttiness of other countries. Actually, and I like the kind of nuttiness. Now, for example, tonight I was talking to a guy. They made a movie, you see, and it was about America. It was about American generals and one thing and another. Only in America would we think to get a Britisher to play the president. only we're the only country that would think of that. I could never conceive of, say, Britain making a movie and getting Kirk Douglas to play the king. Just couldn't happen. They just wouldn't do it, that's all. And yet, in America, it seems only right that we should get a Britisher to play, because we really secretly think a Britisher should be president. We've got a real nutty thing about the English in this country. And I wonder, you know, I've watched so many British plays, and of course we've got a big thing now currently going about British theater. Of course we always have had. Everybody in America vaguely believes, I'm talking about among the literati in the intellectual world, believes that anything that the British do is just absolutely, without question, better. It just has to be because they're doing it. They wouldn't do it unless it was better, you know, that kind of thing. And particularly in the theater, because the Anglophile thing in the theater is just it's running rampant. And in fact, if you have an English accent, you are considered to be already acting by people in the theater. Well, my grandpa Charlie had trouble with his plates too, but he spoke as if he were from the Midwest. So, you know, there's the problem there. Now, I've wondered, I heard a discussion today on the air about the British theater, and of course, the assumption that is made is very interesting, that all the things that are coming over here, that, you know, that they're digging on the theater stage here in New York, are better. They really are. You know, they were talking, well, you know, why is it that they're better was the question. Well, I refuse to say that. I say this, that everything that is British seems to be better to us because we're not British.
You see? And furthermore, I'm curious about some of the plays that are great plays and are, that we call great plays today, that are coming from England. If they were written, say, with a, by an American with a main background instead of, let's say, a small, family in Lancashire. I'm curious. Let's take a thing like Five Finger Exercise. Now, if that was set, if I were to write a delineation of family life, five people living in a duplex bungalow in Ashland, Wisconsin, the daughter, the son, the elderly aunt, we'll say, and the father and the mother, and their interrelationships. I'm curious as to how much interest would be shown in that on the Broadway stage. I mean, unless you had such a wild thing like the son was a secret, cannibal. And he went out at night, you see, and he ate 8-year-old girls, roasting them over his Boy Scout barbecue kit, you know, that kind of thing. You'd have to have a scene going like that. Or you would also have to have a wild scene where the mother is frantically in love with the elderly aunt, you see. And the father has a fantastically perverse, wild love affair that he has going on with a typewriter. Upstairs, you see, he's in love with the typewriter. And the kid, well, you know, on and on and on. Now, if I were to write a five-finger exercise about Ashland, Wisconsin, I wonder how many people would even give 20 cents to go see it. But if it's a British family, because we all feel vaguely inferior to the British anyway, it gives us not only the sense that we're seeing something very important because all of the things are done in a British accent, but also we're like the poor relative peering into the window. It's voyeurism, you know, we're peering into the window of a kind of superior race. And we're seeing, you know, seeing sweep things under the carpet and so on. And we say, ah, yes, it's very interesting, very interesting. Well, I'm just, these things just intrigue me. And so I think finally now we are beginning on almost all fronts. It's like the big lie technique that It really does work, you know. If you tell a person something enough, continually, over and over and over and over and over and over again, whether it has a grain of truth or not, in the end, he will begin to doubt his own sanity. And then finally, the eventual result, of course, will be that he will begin to agree with you about what you have said, and finally then he will outdo you. He will go even further, you know. He'll go 10 million miles further than you ever thought of in your first business. Now, for a long time, you see, the world has been telling America that it has no culture at all, and that anything American is not even worth looking at, a ridiculous thing. Well, we never really agreed with it. See, we kept, you know, fooling around and doing stuff, you know. O'Neill kept writing plays about Americans and stuff, you know. And we didn't really agree with it. You see, Thornton Wilder wrote play, you know, and until finally it began to wear us down until eventually now we are at the point where we agree that there's nothing interesting about America. We absolutely agree with it. You will find at least, I would say at least 75% of the people in academic circles who without even questioning, not even a question, will say, why, well, of course, actually, well, you know, it's an American playwright, you know. And it's a kind of an interesting thing. Now, let's even take it in the political side. If you keep telling a country long enough, if you keep saying long enough over and over and over and over again, you are guilty, you are guilty, you are guilty, you are guilty, eventually the country will say, yeah, 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 I did it all, but I'm rotten, oh boy. And the next thing you know, they are yelling, I'm guilty, do you hear me? I'm guilty, I'm the one that did it all. And the first guy that started it was a Mahler, actually, old chap. Now, I wouldn't go that far. No, what are you trying to do? Tell me I'm not guilty? Come here, I'll show you. You know, it's a very interesting thing. And so now today, oddly enough, you will find, not oddly enough, I guess the way it is, you know, you will find that the very things that, the enemies of America, the very things that the other countries have been saying, which in many cases are based on pure sophistry, and hypocrisy and a secret desire to hope to somehow make somebody guilty. The very things which we were laughing at like 10, 15 years ago, now people are trumpeting themselves and yelling and howling, yeah, we're guilty, we're guilty, we're guilty, oh, we did it, we caused Hitler to come about, we caused it all, we caused the Japanese to bomb us, we caused it all, we caused Hitler to start the gas ovens up, wow, woo, you know, and it's a very interesting thing to see it come about. And so today now we are outdoing the other countries in admitting our guilt, quote, and that's in big quotes. The movie that I saw tonight was a great example of that. I wonder how many people are going to spot the basic, not only fallacy, but the basic dishonesty in this movie, which purports to be a great realistic, not realistic, but a great truthful movie about war. Curious. What was the movie? Oh, it'll open. You'll hear a lot of hollering about it. It'll be a big thing. It doesn't make any difference what the name of it is. It'll be a big deal. But the intriguing, it reminds me of Catch-22, you know, in the sense that the beautiful technique can cover up a really tenuous, and not only tenuous, but a very fallacious basic philosophy. So, you know, this is an old story. If you can build an automobile that looks so magnificent, that has so many beautiful looking knobs and gadgets on it, believe me, nobody's going to worry a bit when the cardboard transmission falls out. You know, this is a fact. If you have a good package, you don't have to worry one bit about whether or not the syrup is any good. Because people will generally feel that if the package is that good, what's inside must be good too. And if it isn't good, they aren't getting it. They are not getting it. I saw a movie here that was supposed to be one of the funniest things in the world. This big Cinerama deal here recently. I don't think I laughed twice in the entire 3 hours and 20 minutes of it. You know, I just sat there, and everybody is busting a gut because, you see, what you do, you set up a scene. It's interesting. You set up a scene where you tell a guy, well, this should be very funny. This kind of stuff is funny, you know, fella. And it hasn't made you laugh, so you see the guys flying through the air and people hitting each other with wet bladders and stuff. And it doesn't make you laugh, but you're told so blatantly that it's funny that you figure, well, gee, I don't know what's the matter. Maybe my tooth is hurting me. I can't figure it out. And, of course, there's always a few fools who will mistake being told that something is funny for it actually being funny. So they're sitting there, yap, 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 and it's going on, and you look at them, you know, and you say, well, that kind of guy is the kind of guy that laughs at any joke anyway. Then any time the boss comes over and belts him in the ribs and says, listen to this one, boy, he starts laughing before he even hears the punchline. Oh, yeah, oh, that's funny, Jack. Oh, he keeps on, well, I haven't told you the joke yet. And, you know, he's off to the races. People, of course, there's another thing, too. Nobody wants to be accused of not having any sense of humor. And when he sees a funny should be a funny situation, he's got to laugh right away to let everybody know he gets it, you know, that kind of thing. He wants to let everyone know he gets it. And so in the end, he winds up laughing. He's the only one in the crowd laughing. And everyone says, gee whiz, maybe I'm missing something. What are they laughing about? It has not amused you. Well, I'm just intrigued by this new twist that's come about of accepting a kind of accepting other people's constant evaluation of yourself. That's the very hip thing to do. Very hard to get anybody. It's intriguing to note how many people today use as a great cop-out what I like to call, what I have noticed growing again in this country, the unequal equation. For example, I have actually heard people equate the racial situation in Birmingham, let us say, with the concentration camp at Dachau or Belsen. I've actually heard that equation. Isn't that a fantastic equation? You know, that's like equating elephants with fleas. And I'm certainly not coming along here and telling you that the racial situation in Birmingham should be condoned. Not a bit of it. But you know, I'll lay you 10 to 1 that if Hitler came up today, if Hitler were to be growing
and were to be doing exactly what he did in Germany today, you would find very few guys who would even do, who would even think of doing anything about it. Because you know what their first answer would be? Yeah, well, I'll tell you. We have no right to judge Hitler. Look what we're doing in Mobile. Two very vastly different. First of all, the one is a government policy, literally a government policy of extermination, and the other is the work of a few nuts in the country. There may be even a lot of nuts in the country, but it certainly isn't a government law that people blow up Sunday schools. It's a very interesting problem, and yet the unequal equation is constantly being used today as the, quote, truth, the truth. It's very dangerous. Very dangerous, because, you know, Hitler was adept at that. Oh, very much. Hitler used that kind of stuff all the time. Believe me, if there was a fist fight between 75 German soldiers and two little guys who were wearing Polish uniforms, Hitler would say, once again, the German soldiers have been mercilessly beaten, mercilessly treated as dogs by those... Yeah. And people began to say, yeah. Be careful of the unequal equation. Believe me, a man in one part of the country being forced to sit in the back of the bus by, again, nutty racial bigots is not the same as 6 million people being put into ovens. Not at all. And I'm certainly not condoning sitting in the back of the bus. I'm merely saying this is the kind of nutty equation that you keep seeing around. Now, this movie tonight is in a sense, you'll see it, you'll hear all about it. I know it doesn't make any difference, but it's an example of that kind of thing. It's an example of taking a tiny sliver of truth and making it seem like the whole truth. Again, this is another dangerous thing. It's like, here's what it's roughly equivalent to. And it's based on the situation. If you find one general who has had, let's say, a nervous breakdown and is literally a psychotic, then you write a movie saying that all generals are psychotics. Be careful. You know, that's the kind of generalization that the very guys who write these kind of movies would bridle at. It's on both sides. For example, I have heard very well-meaning writers, say things like, all white men are immoral. Well, yes, I've heard that. I mean, I you know who it is, a very famous writer. You'll probably wind up getting a Pulitzer Prize. But nevertheless, this writer said that, and he is the very first guy in about three or four paragraphs later to say, the one thing that makes him mad is the fact that white men have a tendency to apply generalizations to the colored people. Oh, boy. And everyone nods and says, yeah, that's true. Accepting the total untruth there, and the fact that if he had said some men, white men are immoral, or most white men are immoral, great, I'll accept that. He'd have to prove it, but I'll accept it. But when you make a generalization like that, be careful. And what really bothers me is that you find very few people objecting to that kind of generalization. Because the basic premise of the argument generally is on the side of right. You know? It's generally based on a moral issue. So be careful. It's a very, very funny thing happening. I don't know how long it would take, but, I suspect that if this trend continues in this country, we're in for some really wild times. I suspect. Now, of course, another thing that goes along with it, it's a kind of a parallel evil, is the feeling that certain people are always truthful. Certain people are totally selfless. They have no, and everything they say is real and truthful. It's very hard to argue with. You can't argue. In fact, if you argue with them, you're automatically against the good things that they're for. This is another sneaky, dangerous thing. It's kind of like building a new kind of Superman, the Superman of truth, the Superman of beauty, and the Superman of insight and sensitivity, and you just can't argue with them. Well, McCarthy, of course, did this in a way. That's an old trick of demagogues, both on the right side and the wrong side of the fence. It is roughly this. It can be boiled down to this. If you're against me, You're against the beautiful things that I stand for. Hence, you're an enemy. Be careful. Hitler used that. You see, Hitler claimed he was always for Germany. He was more for Germany than anybody in Germany. So if you said anything against him, he says, well, obviously you're against Germany. And that was the end of that. And you were in trouble. And if you were to argue, let's take almost any one of the current situations, any burning situation. Let's take unemployment, for example. Now, if a guy suddenly starts yelling that he has the answers to unemployment, you know, he's going to find out why it isn't, why it's happening and why nobody's, you know, the whole problem is going on. And you say, well, look, you know, I don't like your methods, Charlie. I think you're being dishonest about it. What do you mean? You mean to tell me you're for unemployment? Do you mean to tell me you want to see guys starving in the streets? What are you, an enemy of little children whose teeth are falling out because they can't get milk? Here's the enemy, folks. And the next thing you know, they're chasing you down the street, and the flamethrowers are out, and they're putting you in the tar. And all you said is, you know, Charlie, I don't think you're using some of your figures are inaccurate. I think you're making them up, you know? So this is beginning to be a very intriguing thing in our time. Very interesting problem. And it certainly is, it's running rampant in the race situation. You can find very few people who are objective at all about it on either side. Very few people. And in fact, people are today afraid to be. The minute they are objective, they're yelled at by both sides. So, you know, it's like you wind up with a very funny thing going on to the point where, you know, it's kind of like boom and bust, way out in left field. If you were ever, now let's take certain other areas. There are two groups. Let's take the situation of the international thing. Certain people, and there are many of them today, that if you were ever to suggest that Russia could conceivably be capable of a dishonest act, what are you? What are you? One of those rotten right-wingers? What are you? I had no idea you were one of those nutty John Birchers. You're all the way. You know, see? Now, on the other hand, the other side of the picture is this. There are another very large group of people who, if you were to imply that Russia has some good things about it, or America could be wrong, aha! All right, get out the book. Get out. Here's another one. Here's another fellow traveler, a comm simp, another one of those obvious sell-down-the-river nuts. Here he goes, another one of those so-called pseudo-liberals. And the next thing you know... So it's that kind of nuttiness that's going on. It's really rampant. If you were ever to suggest, for example, to a guy who is a real dedicated peace type, a real militant peace type, that it is an unfortunate fact that occasionally, it seems to be historically, that a war is inescapable. For example, how could you have ever stopped Hitler from doing what Hitler was doing without one? There will be a pregnant pause. Aha! Uh-huh. A warmonger! Another one of those idiotic, those kill-crazed, hate-honed, down to a warmonger! You know, there you are. Of course, there are certain questions that are unanswerable. Of course, then usually you'll hear all kinds of rash. We should have done something about Hitler early in the game. Oh no, not so easy. Because early in the game, nothing ever seems to be like what it finally winds up being. So that we're filled with all kinds of wild contradictions and paradoxes. On the one hand, it's interesting. Now, this movie seems to imply that to have any kind of a defense system is sheer nuttiness. Sheer nuttiness, and it's run by nuts, idiots, wild, completely irrational people who would love nothing more than to blow up the Western world. I wonder how many of you have ever really met a general or the pilot of a Delta Wing bomber. They're very different from what you think they are, and very different from the way the movies portray them. Just like, look at other things in your life. Have you ever met a guy who works in an agency on Madison Avenue? Have you ever met one anything even remotely like Jack Lemmon? No. I'm becoming very suspicious about the theatrical world and its ability to reproduce reality or even foreshadow reality. Curious. Now let's take that wonderful, all-loving stenographer of us all, that Earth Mother of all stenographers, Shirley MacLaine. Have you ever once met anyone remotely like Shirley MacLaine in any typing pool? I'm sorry. I saw Irma LaDuce, Shirley MacLaine playing a lady of easy virtue. Have you ever met a lady of easy virtue, any of you? Anything remotely like Shirley MacLaine? This is the kind of insanity we do, you know. Everyone sits up there and nods their heads. Well, I can guarantee you that I have. So you know, you begin to wonder where does it all begin? Where does it stop? I think often that our best intentions plunge us into a war. The more we try to prove we're against war, the more we set up the pins for one. Curious thing. Very curious. As a matter of fact, the picture that I'm saying was really actually a pro-war picture. In a nutty way, and I'm sure the guys who wrote it believed it was an anti-war, and I'll tell you why. It was a pro-war picture. If I was a Russian and I saw that movie, I would load up every Delta Wing bomber I had that night and I would send it off before that nut in the American Air Force set off the bomb and blew everybody up. Funny. And of course, many of our movies, many of our books and that about this problem are based on gigantic fallacies. One of the great fallacies is that one nut can set off the entire A-bomb chain. Just this is one of the great fallacies. And there have been several books written about this problem. And, of course, I'm not defending A-bombs here. I hope you understand that. But, yeah, it's no. You see, no. And you're wrong, Don. No, you're absolutely wrong. No. If I have an idea that's cockeyed, that does not mean that I am the victim of communist propaganda. Not a bit of it. No siree. No. A guy could be wrong entirely on his own, Don, and you've seen plenty of them in this business. Plenty of them in this business. And it has nothing to do with the propaganda from the promotion department. He just sits there, you know, and it comes out. Oh, no. So I wonder what we're up to, you know. And so you'll find that the most applauded books and novels and movies about any given subject are generally the furthest away from the truth of that subject. I can't figure out why. But maybe I do know why. Maybe it's because we want it that way. Makes it easier to secretly do the things we really want to do. You know?
You'll meet some of the best beloved personalities.
And you can meet one right now. It's 2 a.m. WBAI New York.